What have they done to the earth? What have they done to our fair sister? Ravaged and plundered and ripped her and bit her. Stuck her with knives in the sight of the dawn and tied her with fences and dragged her down.
Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Barrett, bringing you excellent guests who tell you all sorts of amazing truths far outside the box of the corporate-controlled mainstream. Today we're going to revisit a favorite topic of the past week and a half or so, and that is the new encyclical from Pope Francis, Laudato Si. It begins, Laudato Si, mi Signore, praise to you, my Lord. In the words of this beautiful canticle, St. Francis of Assisi reminds us that our common home is like a sister with whom we share our life and a beautiful mother who opens her arms to embrace us. Praise be to you, my Lord, through our sister Mother Earth, who sustains and governs us and who produces various fruit with colored flowers and herbs. Pope Francis then says, the sister now cries out to us because of the harm we have inflicted on her by our irresponsible use and abuse of the goods with which God has endowed her. We've come to see ourselves as her lords and masters, entitled to plunder her at will. And it goes on. This is a very interesting critique of the modern consumerist, technological, post-Christian, secularist West. And I think it's a very important document. That's why we've been talking about it on this show with America's leading liberal Jewish voice, Rabbi Michael Lerner, with a leading conservative Catholic intellectual, Michael Jones. And now we're bringing on a man I would consider America's leading, progressive Catholic intellectual, and that's Daniel Sheehan. Daniel Sheehan has done amazing work in his career. You thought William Kunstler was a great activist lawyer. You need to read The People's Advocate by Daniel Sheehan. He goes into his amazing career going from Harvard Law School and Harvard Divinity School through a number of the most important cases of this past century, Pentagon Papers, the Watergate burglary, Karen Silkwood, the Sanctuary Movement, and Iran-Contra. This is really a kind of biography of the second half of the 20th century as well as Daniel Sheehan. And he has some interesting stuff to say about this new encyclical, so let's let him say it. Welcome, Daniel Sheehan. It's an honor. How are you?
Thank you, Kevin. It's good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you back. So this papal encyclical is very exciting in many ways. A lot of people are saying that, you know, we haven't had a real critique of our whole way of life from somebody this important in recent memory. And you have put out a press release suggesting that it's great, but it's left a couple of important things out.
Well, it's the encyclical itself, Pope Francis makes reference to the fact that the indigenous people of North and South America need to be the principal partners involved in any kind of a conversation about the preservation of the lands and any of the resources that are on the traditional Aboriginal lands of these people, since they were the guardians of this property, and they have always demonstrated their great care for living in harmony with the natural resources. And so he says that, but the reality is that the papacy back in 1493, Pope Alexander VI actually issued a major papal bull asserting the doctrine of discovery, in which he asserted that the Catholic Christian nations of Europe had the authority of the papacy to seize the lands and resources of any of the unchristian Aboriginal people in North and South America and authorize them to seize the land and exploit the resources for their nations. And at the same time to attempt to bring those Aboriginals into the Catholic Church. Now, that has been cited, that doctrine of discovery has been cited a number of times by the United States Supreme Court, including Chief Justice John Marshall back in 1893, earlier than that. But the bottom line is that the United States government and the United States Supreme Court and the legal system has cited the existence of that doctrine of discovery as the underlying legal predicate for the seizure of the lands of the Native American people and the exploitation of their resources. I'm just writing a note right now about the fact that the Department of Interior of the United States government, clearly, since the 1887 passage of the Dawes Act, which seized the lands, the major lands, from the Native American people and forced the Native tribes to go onto the reservations and started distributing all of that land that had been seized to the Europeans and giving it to them and allowing them to farm it under the Homestead Act, etc. That entire period is a disgrace. And the government of Canada, just 2 weeks ago, has issued its final report from the Major Truth and Reconciliation Commission that was established by the government. And they have openly acknowledged that the policies of the Canadian government from that exact same period of time onward were designed specifically and consciously for the purpose of seizing the land and taking it from all the people. And that since that time, the lands have been exploited by major oil companies, the most recent, the tar sands, travesty up there, of carving up all the natural land up there and digging out the tar sands and trying to prepare to pipe it through a pipeline all the way down through the native lands of the Lakota people in the Dakotas down to the Gulf of Mexico, where they're going to refine it and put it on ships and sell it to other countries for income for the major oil companies, not even provide it to the people in the United States. So that these policies continue apace, and given the fact that that Pope Francis has completely appropriately recognized that there is an economic system, which he does throughout the document, that there is an economic system that is rooted in a completely different worldview that views the natural resources of the planet as nothing but resources, economic resources to be exploited, and that this is directly contrary to the worldview that was held by the indigenous people, and he makes that point in his encyclical. And so that what we're saying is that when the Pope appears before the joint session of Congress in September, which is scheduled now, he should begin his statements to the Congress by officially withdrawing the doctrine of discovery on the part of the Catholic Church and pull that thread out of the tapestry, the legal tapestry that exists now, justifying the continued retaining of the properties away from the custody of the native people. For example, with the Lakota people, there were 90 million square acres of land, 99% of which was seized and taken away from them, and the vast majority of that, over 90% of that territory, is still completely undeveloped. You have national park lands, national grasslands, national forest lands, that there's national wetlands. They have every single kind of category imaginable. But what they're doing is they're just holding this in the possession of the United States government and not allowing the native indigenous people of the Ocheti, Sekwan, Oyate, the seven council fires, to have custody of their own land. So that there are a number of things that need to be focused on by the spiritual people of our country to solicit additional assistance from Pope Francis in completing the thought that he has, that he set forth in his encyclical letter, but at the same time to celebrate the extraordinarily valuable contribution that he has made to the discussion already, because he systematically points out throughout his papal encyclical that the economic system of the development and exploitation of natural resources of our planet and the manufacturing process that is rooted solely and exclusively in corporations that have no soul, that have no humanity, that have no compassion for people or concern for the earth, needs to be dramatically changed, because it itself is the fundamental proximate causation for the massive global climate change that we're looking at. And so these are extraordinary statements to be made by the head of the largest single spiritual community in on the entire planet. You know, so this is a very serious challenge to the transnational corporate capitalist economic system on the planet, and it's frontal. It's not subtle. He's been very clear in saying that he believes that the transnational corporate capitalist economic system is in fact a direct proximate result of the adoption of another worldview, and that is what he refers to as the postmodern worldview that absolutely refuses to acknowledge that there is any reality at all.
Mm-hmm.
That since no one can necessarily agree upon the particular cosmological assumptions of how our universe came into being, you know, what the teleological direction of evolution is, how human consciousness came into being, you know, or what the methods are by means of which we as human beings can actually answer major cosmic questions like that. It asserts this new postmodern worldview, asserts that therefore no one can reliably depend upon any one of the worldviews that could actually generate a clear set of moral values and a mode of ethical reasoning on the basis of which they could try to constrain the power of the corporations. So the corporations have a right to, in a sense, be a law unto themselves and get to do whatever it is they want to do. And so that he says this in detail in his encyclical, and it comes as a thunderbolt to most of the philosophers of the world who are seeing that he has gone right to the very root of the problem, and he therefore is condemning the economic system that has developed over the last 150 years rooted in that worldview.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a revolutionary document.
Don't you think he's really onto something with this critique of postmodernism, in that it does seem a kind of a Nietzschean strain of postmodernism that's formed its you know, ugliest sort of side with the neocons, who, you know, say things like Karl Rove supposedly said,
yeah,
to Ron Susskind that, you know, he scoffed at all of us, or all of you people out there who are in the reality-based community.
That's right. Said, you're still functioning on a reality-based.
Because we're an empire now. We create our own reality. And while you guys
that's
are,
right.
you know, you guys are trying to figure out what we're doing, we'll just be seven steps ahead of you. You'll never catch up with us.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and I think that's the attitude of the people who pulled off the 9/11 inside job. Let's create our own reality in this, okay, without any moral limits. We're going to, you know, transgress the limits so obscenely that nobody will even imagine that we could have done such a thing. And that's just one example of many of these kinds of transgressions of limits. And of course, corporate capital also transgresses limits because it usury multiplies
the fabrication of an entire false economic system of currency.
Right, because, you know, the real wealth
rooted,
can't keep
it's
up
not
with
rooted
it.
In any relationship to natural resources or the mm-hmm. value of anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely fabricated system that just exists in air.
Right, and I was, you know, actually a little disappointed that he didn't directly go after the usury issue, because clearly when you have exponentially increasing interest, and when all currency is created by being lent into existence at interest, that at exponential...
He makes a reference to it, saying that, you know, one of the consequences of this is the enslavement of people countries in debt.
Yeah.
And it makes it impossible for them ever to get out from under this debt. And he's going to be addressing that issue in his statement on December 8th. He's reserved major international airtime to issue a major statement on December 8th. Now, it's extremely interesting because the major summit in Rome dealing with global climate change is scheduled to take place from November 28th to December 11th. And so by December 8th, we'll know whether the United States and other major nation states, the proximate cause of global climate change, have finally agreed, as they promised they would, by the end of 2015, to accept mandatory, legally enforceable restrictions on their corporations, expelling these global greenhouse gas emissions into the environment. And if they do not, by December 8th, he has this scheduled for the issuance of a jubilee year. And as those of us who are familiar with this know, the jubilee year was a major tradition in the Hebrew culture of calling periodically, if in fact so much debt had been built up inside the Jewish community by those who were charging interest on loans, that the leadership of the Hebrew community would gather together, the spiritual leadership, and declare a jubilee year in which all of those debts were canceled, so as to reboot, as it were, the economy. And so he's, depending upon what the agreements are and how well they have complied with their promise to impose mandatory and legally enforceable restrictions on the major corporations in their nations, you know, Francis is going to be addressing this issue of debt. So there's another whole major shoe to fall on this still.
Well, that'll be interesting, because I found that, you know, this encyclical is beautiful as far as, you know, getting at all the subjects that you could talk about, maybe, you know, they would let you talk about them in the university, but we're really not allowed to talk about the covert bankster-dominated deep state in the universities. And I think that's very much at the root of the problem here. And he didn't really get into either the deep state or the structural issue of currency being created through this usurious process by a private cartel of international bankers. And
well, that's as I say, is one of the issues. He has identified specifically the transnational corporate capitalist system and the worldview from which it flows, and has made passing reference to the issue of the debt enslaving people and nations. Mm-hmm. And so the issue is he has basically made the shot across the bow of the transnational corporate capitalists and their partners in the banking realm. Not partners, they're almost the same people that sit on those boards of directors.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, you know, with the Rockefellers and you know, David Rockefellers that own the Chase, not only the Chase bank system, J.P. Morgan Chase, but they, you know, own the major other institutions. So that what we're dealing with here is a pope who has put his finger on a critical central aspect of what the problem is, and he has found an item of the global greenhouse gases and the global climate change, which is unavoidable for people to recognize. It's not something abstract. It's not like, you know, 10 million people starving to death on the planet every year, but they're in foreign countries where people don't see them. The people are seeing massive drought in California. They're seeing gigantic, huge, historically unprecedented storms all winter long with these huge belts of freezing, sub-freezing weather coming down from the Arctic into the central part of the United States, all the way down to Florida. They're seeing massive increases in tornadoes and the power of the tornadoes. They're seeing massive tidal waves and the destruction of entire cities, like with New Orleans and in the East Coast.
And what do you say to people who haven't figured this out yet? Because about half my audience objects when lean towards the alarmist view on climate change. You know, I recently read David Ray Griffin's terrific book, Unprecedented, which I think nails it pretty well. But the problem is that we're living in this postmodern world where the Nietzschean lunatics have seized control of the media and have fed us so many myths and lies that we don't know which way is up. And the scientific community, for example, is completely missing in action when it comes to talking about the disappearance at freefall acceleration of three skyscrapers on 9/11, allegedly from relatively minor office fires. My audience doesn't believe the authoritative sources of knowledge anymore. And there are all these different interpretations of what could be going on with global warming and climate change. People point out that the whole solar system is heating up. All the other planets are heating up, too. Maybe this is the sun. It's not human caused. Things like that. Half my audience, at least, I think, is skeptical about this issue. So where would we tell them to look to face the likely reality that, in fact, this really is happening?
Well, one of the things, there's a major new documentary, a film out now, that's called The Merchants of Doubt. And what it demonstrates is that the exact same public relations firms that have been hired by the oil companies to basically sell this idea of thinking of two or three different alternative theories as to what's conceivably going on here, that they're specifically hired to sow doubt in the minds of the people, that these are the exact same companies, in many cases the exact same men, who in fact were hired by the tobacco companies to come up with different alternative theories as to what was causing cancer, and trying to manufacture and falsify documents to show that there was no direct proof that smoking actually affected people getting cancer. And it took like 35, 40 years for us to go through the litigation process to finally be able to establish this and show that these people were intentionally infusing their cigarettes with chemicals that were designed to addict people with full knowledge that it was giving them cancer. And it wasn't until we were able to extract those documents, Larry Tribe, who was my professor, my constitutional law professor at Harvard, as well as Obama's professor, you know, it was one of the ones that litigated that and finally extracted those internal documents from them that Lowell Bergman in the movie, remember, that was Al Pacino and Russell Crowe starring, called The Insider, where they actually related some of that history of extracting those internal documents and proving this in the court of law. It's the exact same men that are now trying to deceive the American public, who have been hired by the petroleum companies to falsify the record and try to deceive people. I think if people go to see that documentary, and you can get it on the internet now, called The Merchants of Doubt, you'll see that when they hire those exact same men, you can get, I think, average people looking at that to say, oh, wait a second, you know, why would anybody do that? Why would anybody go and hire those exact same people when they know perfectly well that they are professional liars? You know, so that's one of the things I think that we can do to look at that. But
they're even less trustworthy than the mainstream.
That's right. You know, yeah. It's like, you know, they even bring on McNeil there, you know, they bring on PBS. They say, well, here's a person on one side of it. Here's the person representing 200 globally recognized scientists who are asserting that this is what's causing the global climate change. And over here, we have Joe Schmo, who is hired by the American Enterprise Institute, you know, to come on to make the other argument. So the media present this as though this was more or less an evenly balanced discussion. Because here's one side and here's the other, and therefore it's up to you people out there just to decide, you know, between the two of these, what you think. I mean, that's no way. It's not representative of objective reality at all.
Of course,
you know, that's like having one person come on and say, here, I'm arguing that the Earth is flat, you know, and here's another person arguing that the Earth is round, and so let's just have a debate between the two.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the corporate owned media are doing. But when you find out that NBC is owned by General Electric, you know, and General Electric owns, you know, the companies that build the jet engines for most of the fighter planes that the United States uses to mount its major imperial wars, for example, into the Middle East to seize and control the oil fields of the Middle East, and you see that ABC is owned by Cap City, the chairman of the board of whom was Bill Casey, the head of the American Central Intelligence Agency, you know, that was helping to run the Iran-Contra scandal.
And he, you know? he was an old hand at Black Ops. He was involved in Operation Gladio. Of course, that he was actually, wasn't he Catholic, and wasn't he involved in the P2 Masonic Lodge that was using the Vatican Bank?
No, he was actually in the Knights of Malta.
Knights of Malta,
He was a member of the Knights of Malta. You know, one of my investigators during the Iran-Contra case was actually assigned to go to Pakistan to meet with the president of Pakistan to get him to move weapons, older Pakistani weapons given to them by the United States to the Mujahideen to help fight the Soviets in Afghanistan. And the bottom line, when my investigator was coming back from having done that negotiation, he was directed to come back through Rome after leaving Pakistan to go to a particular address, and he went to the address and knocked on the door, and it turns out to be the head of the Knights of Malta. And when he came to the door, they knew who he was, and they gave him a little note with a phone number on it. And he went into a room, dialed the phone, and it was a private unlisted phone number for Bill Casey, the head of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Wow.
So that alliance that used to exist between the fascists, the right-wing extreme fascists, you know, like Bill Casey, and Vice President Cheney, and these guys, that alliance used to be with Pope Pius XII and his Secretary of State, Cardinal Viaud. There was an element inside the very hierarchy of the Catholic Church in the Vatican that were pro-fascist and anti-communist, because they took the position that the communists were atheistic and had suppressed the Catholic Church in Russia, which was true. And so that they took this position that, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah, I was just talking about this with Paul Williams.
Pardon?
Have you read Paul Williams' book? He has a new book out called Operation Gladio that goes into the gory details of how the Vatican Bank became the world's biggest money laundry for the CIA, which was the world's biggest drug smuggling operation.
No. We know about that.
Of course, you were involved in actually litigating these cases and exposing this stuff. You're kind of lucky to be alive, actually.
We're the ones that extracted the information he's putting in his book.
That's true.
Right.
Right. Wow. So, and that's another thing that Pope Francis really ought to deal with, I think, is this corrupt side of the Catholic Church. You know, we heard when the previous Pope Benedict resigned, leading the way for Pope Francis to become Pope.
Yeah.
There were all sorts of stories being told about how he had encountered a ring involving quote-unquote sexual Freemasonry, which was essentially the money launderers who have some kind of weird, sick homosexual cabal going in the Vatican, and they blackmail each other, and then they get involved in the drug money laundering stuff. And
one just has to be a little bit careful about getting too carried away about the whole world being, you know, satanic child rapers. I mean, the bottom line is that there's this. If you focus, in my opinion, I spent a lot of time on this stuff, as you know, that if you focus upon the actual existence of this concept of fascism, which basically is a wedding, the alliance between the state, the nation state, and corporations. That from the time that the corporation was created as a specific business vehicle at the end of the American Civil War, in which they established the ability to have the resources of a company in effect owned by the owners of the shares of the stock of the corporation. But those owners were completely immunized against any liability at all on their part. And the management of the corporation were completely immunized from any personal liability or anything that the corporation did. And yet the owners of the stock were entitled to all the profits.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
there's something wrong with that, isn't there?
It's a structural source of evil.
Well, I'm glad you said that.
Clear
that they will in fact
pursue the short-term profits. They will pass off the costs of the doing business onto the community if they can. They'll pump the poison toxins from their companies out into the rivers, and they don't care if it poisons people because the corporation has no soul,
right?
Has no conscience.
So the bottom line,
the creation of this particular mechanism ended up generating a vehicle by means of which the robber barons from 1868 at the end of the American Civil War all the way to 1898 with the ascendance into office of McKinley, you know, in Mark Hanna, and they were the paradigmatic capitalists. And the bottom line is they formulated a form of government in which the corporations basically take over and control the power of the state. and that they utilized the mechanisms of the state, their military and others, to pursue their own economic ends. And we saw all of that happen with the foreign military expeditionary forces that were sent down into Nicaragua in 1906, you know, to overthrow the democratically elected government on behalf of the clients of Brown Brothers Harriman, including United Fruit. We saw these things. This is once the Soviet Union has dissolved itself on December 31st of 1991, we now, as Americans, are free to take an honest and open look at what the criticisms are of the capitalist system without being accused of being an agent of a foreign power like the Soviet Union. And so that we can now, what's really happened since 1991 is that with the dissolution of the Soviet Union, the leadership in the United States retrenched right back to the basic organizing principle that was governing Western civilization as of 1917, which was the robber barons and transnational corporate capitalism rooted in the superiority of the Caucasian race, authorizing the utilization of military forces of the nation states to actually engage in imperial wars to garner more resources to bring back in and put into the hands of the corporations, so that they could continue to enrich the few wealthy families that owned the shares of stock. This is what's happening. We can now look at this forthrightly, and now the church can look at this forthrightly. Now that they're no longer going to be accused of being an agent of the Soviets or something.
Right.
So that's what's really happening. Francis has now taken the lead, stepping forward in this post-Cold War era of stepping forward, finally naming the beast, belling the cat, identifying them as the ultimate enemies here. These are the culprits that are causing this pain and anguish that's being imposed upon the rest of the world for their financial benefit. That's what we're experiencing. That's what the encyclical is all about.
Well, that's fascinating. And you know, Michael Jones, who I just had on talking about the same issue, has been calling for rapprochement between the Catholics and Islam, and especially the state of Iran, which Mike has grown rather fond of. And he points out that there could be a real alliance here in terms of the issue of usury and the creation of currency by being lent into existence at interest, all of which has to be repaid, and that's mathematically unsustainable. It forces us into this kind of situation we're in now, where we have quadrillions in derivatives floating around, representing far more than the earth would be worth in eons of production. And so that's one issue. And of course, Islam has held on to its prohibition of any form of lending at interest. And so the Pope wants to go back to something like that, he's got a lot of friends in the Islamic world. And then secondly, you mentioned the corporation as a structural root of evil. I absolutely agree. And there's a very strong tendency in Islamic thought and Islamic law against any kind of fictitious person, such as corporations, or even governments, for that matter. Because in Islam, we believe that you go straight to the boss, right? You don't go through the clergy and the Pope or anything like that. You go straight to God. And it's every individual is entirely responsible for their own sins and will be rewarded for their own good deeds before God. There's no get-out-of-jail-free card with any with Jesus being crucified for your sins. Nope, we don't buy that. And we don't believe that there should be any kind of structural false person who can take the sins of another, intercede and get rid of the sins of another. All that stuff is out in Islam. So Islam really has those two cardinal points of doctrine down correctly for the modern world. And if the Pope were to say, hey, we're going to join the Muslims and say no usury and say no corporate personhood, that would be very exciting.
Yes, I think the elimination of the corporation as a person and this whole attribution to them of being able to engage in activity with no legal liability flowing to the owners of the stock is at the heart of the beast. And I think that we need to focus on that and to assist Francis in raising that up out of his discourse and making that pointed, because that's a form of reform that we can clearly undertake. It isn't as though these corporations have existed forever. They were just instituted after the end of the Civil War at the behest of the robber barons. And, you know, that we now have seen the robber barons rise into their full ascendancy and almost bring the world to a halt in 1929 with their self-destruction. And we're seeing it again, that as soon as the Soviet Union that arose at the end of World War One to try to stave them off and to confront them has dissolved, you know, they came right back into the fore. And they're now asserting their right and power to dominate the world, to establish full-spectrum dominance over the entire world using the United States military and the powers of the state. We've got to deprive them of that. We have to move against them, dissolve the existence of the corporations, allow people to, and this is not to oppose people having entrepreneurial spirit. It's not to oppose people being able to make a reasonable income from their work and their labors. You know, but the fact of the matter is to set up this false corporation as an entity that immunizes the owners from any responsibility while they're still being allowed to reap all the profits is completely unacceptable. It's a sinful structure, and we need to remove that. And we need to remove the Federal Reserve Bank. We need to get rid of privately owned banks that in fact hold not only the individuals in enslavement, but also the nation state itself. Of a huge building debt, most of which, as you know, is used to finance the building of the militaries, which is used to mount their imperial wars. And they transfer this wealth to the same corporations that build the war machinery. So what we've got to do is strike at the existence of the corporation, do away with the personhood of the corporation, do away with the business structure of a corporation that immunizes the owners, and allow business to flourish. Just simple businesses. People own their businesses. They're responsible for what they do. Then they realize that they can't engage in certain kind of activities just to increase the profits, and they make a reasonable income from their activities, and they refrain from trying to pass off all the costs onto the public. Now that's that, and then we have to eliminate the Federal Reserve Bank, as I said, and have an alternative economic system. And you see places like Mondragon and other places around the world that have an alternative economic structure to capitalism, and it can work. So, but it's taken a crisis like the global climate change and the massive storms and the destruction of entire cities going underwater like New Orleans before people are willing to pay attention. But that seems to be sort of a plight of our human family, that until such time as there's a major crisis, people kind of coast along, and just like the proverbial frog being put into warm water, and you can turn the heat up higher and higher and higher until they're cooked, you know. But if you try to throw them into a boiling pot of water, they'll jump out. So we see now that the water has started to boil, and the people are getting ready to jump out of that. And so we're trying to jump out and recognize what the damage is here that's being done. And there are simple structural sources of solution, of eliminating the corporation as a person and as a business vehicle, and eliminating the private banks with their usurious interest rates, and set up a government collectively owned bank where people can pool their resources and are willing to, you know, extend loans to people who can develop businesses, et cetera, and pay back the loans, but they don't have to have these massive interests because it's all run by the Federal Treasury, and it's run by the finances of people who have their money put into the bank, and they can use that. They don't have to have massive amounts of profit being made through the interest because the banks are being financed by the tax monies, just like your highways or your public water systems or anything else. That's the solution to this thing.
Well, that makes sense to me.
I think he knows it.
Yeah.
I think the Pope knows it.
Wow.
And that's where he's going. He's got a group of very, very intelligent people. He's brought in, you know, Sean O'Malley from Boston and a number of other guys. He's got, you know, the Cardinal who's the head of the Peace and Justice Commission there. And so he's got new people, and he's moving the people out from the Vatican Bank. He's weeding out all those people. He's now excluding any of the cardinals that are over the age of 80 from being able to vote for the next pope. You know, they're starting to order them to be retired. He's going to stay in long enough to replace the majority of a lot of those more reactionary cardinals and stuff that are in the College of Cardinals, prohibit them from voting in the next election, and then he's going to retire. You know, that's what he's going to do. He's going to spend all of his political capital on getting these fundamental reforms put in, and then he's going to retire. And they're going to be allowed to have a new selection of a new pope who will probably be Sean O'Malley from Boston. So you have the first American pope who is then going to be able to take some of the steps vis-a-vis the United States of really taking aggressive positions to change the federal banking system and a major corporate economic system without being accused of being some kind of an agent of a foreign power.
Well, that's really interesting, but it sounds kind of amazing that we would have two popes retiring, you know, when none have done that for many centuries before.
Yeah, there's only one. There's only one that have. What was his name?
It was like 700 years ago, right?
Yeah, yeah, but what was his name? It starts with a C, but anyway, the bottom line is that he was a monk. He was actually a meditative, contemplative monk, and they it was like in 1233 or something like that, and the fact is that the church was in such a turmoil because of its corruption and perversions and stuff at the highest levels that they wanted to have a genuine saint to be the pope, and they went up into the mountains to get him. He was up in at a monastery meditating, and when he saw him coming, he ran away.
Well, that's the kind of guy you need.
That's right. He didn't want to do this.
That's actually how Khamenei was in Iran, too. They had to drag him kicking and screaming to make him supreme leader.
So they brought him back, and they made him the pope. And he was there for a matter of like 8-9 months, and he said, I can't do this. This is totally unacceptable. And he retired. And he was the only one that's ever done it. And now Benedict didn't retire voluntarily. There have been others that have been murdered or ousted. But, Benedict was only the second one ever to quote, retire. But he was, in fact, fired. So
what's your inside information here that Pope Francis is also going to retire?
You got to say he's the first Jesuit. He's the first Jesuit in history ever to be pope. And I was chief counsel for the United States Jesuit headquarters from 1975 to 1985. I personally know Pedro Arrupe, who was the superior general of the Jesuits. I knew all 10 of the provincials of the United States. We had 42 missions in 42 different countries. You know, we ran all 28 of the major Jesuit universities in the United States, you know, in all the Jesuit high schools. You know, we were in a position of knowing of what was generally going on, and we developed the 32nd General Congregation documents back in 1975 under Pedro Arrupe, the Superior General, to actually call for the identification and the deconstruction of the structural sources of injustice, both in Western civilization and in Eastern civilization, in order to preserve our human family from self-destruction, which we could do at the hands of thermonuclear weapons, nuclear waste, or global climate change and contamination. So I've known about these policies, and I was one of the people that helped draft these policies in the United States. So I know what's going on here. And
well, how do you know this pope is planning on resigning, though? That's kind of amazing.
Because he's told his fellow Jesuits that that's what he's going to be doing.
Really? Wow, fascinating. Yeah. So are we breaking this here on Truth Jihad Radio?
Oh,
Pope's going to resign?
That's one of the biggest stories I've ever heard. It won't be for another 5 years or so.
Wow.
Because he wants to establish the precedent that people who are in the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, when they get to be 80 years old, they need to retire and to get all of that dead wood out of there, you know. And so he's already issued the edict that none of the cardinals over the age of 80 can participate in the next conclave. He's already done that. And he's now started to insist that all bishops, by the time they get to be 75, need to retire. So what he's going to do is he's going to demonstrate to them that even he can lay down the mantles of power and step aside voluntarily. And that's in Pedro Arrupe tried to do that as the superior general back in 1982 or so. He tried to retire when he turned 80 years old, and all the cardinals went crazy, said, oh, no, you can't do that. Because if you do that, it's going to establish a precedent. It's going to put pressure on us to have to retire.
Uh-huh.
And so there's this chess game going on that Francis is engaged in. So that's what's going to cause him to step down. He's going to step down. And you need to remember that the person who got the second largest number of votes in the conclave that selected Francis was Sean O'Malley.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's Sean, he like? Is he
Sean is a saint. Sean really? Is an absolute saint. You know, he's a Franciscan Capuchin monk. You know, he wears the brown robe all the time and the cowl and the whole nine yards and sleeps on the floor at night. He's an ascetic and a total celibate, and he's an absolute saint. He is the guy that dropped the hammer on all of those pedophile priests all through Boston. He was brought up to be the cardinal in Boston. He not only fired all of those guys, but he turned them all into the police. You know, none of this here, let's put him into therapy or transfer him somewhere else where nobody knows about him. You know, they said, no, let's expose them, turn him into the police. He ordered all the lawyers that were litigating on behalf of the Catholic Church and the Boston Archdiocese to stop resisting the discovery demands that were being made by the victims, turn over all those internal documents to them. And he is one of the best friends of Francis. And he sits at his right hand in that kitchen cabinet that Francis has. And he is the one, as I said, that was the number two guy in the voting in the conclave, and he's the heir apparent to Francis. So when Francis retires in about five more years, they're going to have another conclave. The more reactionary cardinals have been excluded from participating in that election. They'll have a bunch of new people that have been appointed by Francis. And they're going to select Sean to be the next pope. And he will carry, if they think they've got trouble with Francis, you know, where do you get a load of Sean O'Malley? You know, Sean O'Malley is going to drop the hammer on these guys.
Well, I hope he'll have good security if he does, because, you know, didn't we have some issues with, like, John Paul getting poisoned
when
he tried that?
Yeah, that's true. You know, that's why this is a transitional pope. Francis is a transitional pope, transitioning from the old order, which was personified by Benedict. I mean, Benedict, you know, Ratzinger is the guy that silenced Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. He's the guy that silenced Hans Kuhn. He was the head of the Committee on Orthodoxy, the Committee of the Doctrine of the Faith.
But is hyper-orthodoxy the same thing as corruption?
No. But what it is part of it is that there was this reactionary effort to, quote, protect the church, to protect its reputation. They keep on telling themselves that, look, even if in fact there are a number of pedophile priests, you conceal all of that, because if you reveal that to the people, they'll lose their absolute faith in the church. And the whole past doctrine was that the church exists to interpose itself between Yahweh, between the infinite and eternal being, and the individual people, that they cannot have direct access to the infinite and eternal. And therefore, there needs to be a conduit. That whole thing of Jesus dying for your sins, that there's this whole kind of substitute of someone else, you know, being the people who have direct access to the infinite and eternal, and the regular people don't. That was the entire doctrine of the church that was set up under Rome, when it actually served as a legate for Rome.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we Muslims don't buy.
That's right. So we're in the process now of moving away from that, and that we're going to be establishing the ability of the people of God to have direct line to the infinite and eternal. And that Francis sees that as the mission of the church, to shift away from this intercession on the part of the church in having people place absolute blind faith in their priests and their bishops in their church. That what he's trying to do is he's trying to mobilize the people of God. And that's what his papal exhortation was on November 24th of 2013. He issued Evangelii Gaudium, which was his apostolic exhortation, which ought to be read in tandem with this encyclical of June 18th. You have to read the two of these things together, because what he's saying in Evangelii Gaudium is he's saying that, look, the church is the people of God. It's not the hierarchy. It's not the elite. It's not all these people. You know, it is the people of God. Now that is a major theme that was sounded back, you know, under Pedro Arrupe. Pedro Arrupe, the Superior General of the Jesuits, is the guy that shifted all the Jesuits out of hanging out in the royal courts with all the elite governing for the families of Europe, and actually ordered the Jesuit guys to get out of those royal courts and to get out into the community to live with the poor and the oppressed people. And that was the entire shift that took place in the Jesuit order under Pedro Arrupe back in 1962. And it was under Pedro Arrupe that I was there at the headquarters in Washington, D.C. So there's an entire different vision of the church that is coming about now. There's actually a book out called, it was written by Malachi Martin, a former Jesuit, very conservative former Jesuit, called The Jesuits, The Betrayal of the Holy Roman Catholic Church. And he asserts that the Jesuits have basically betrayed the church, because rather than blindly following the Vatican and doing what the Vatican tells everybody to do, what they have done, and their whole role was solely and exclusively to save the individual soul of individuals. And they have transformed that entire mission into becoming, his quote, the point of the spear of the social justice movement on the planet. And that's what you're looking at. That's what you're looking at in the person of Francis. You know, as the first Jesuit that has been the Pope in the entire 2,000 year history of the Catholic papacy. You know, so that what you're looking at now, you're looking straight at what the Jesuits are all about. And that's what Francis is doing. And he's issued this clarion call for the people to rise up in Evangelii Gaudium, to rise up and assert the power of the Gospels, to get back to the first century Christian communities of owning things in common, you know, and sharing their resources and going out and reaching out to people that are both in the Jewish community and in the non-Christian and non-Jewish world, you know, to share the good news. We're not here to recruit Catholics. We're not here to, you know, recruit people into paying 10% of their income to the church or anything. What we're here to do is to share the good news. And the good news is dramatic. And it relates to Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, who was silenced by Ratzinger. It talks about the evolution of consciousness, the whole evolving of a new faculty within our human family that is able to directly and immediately experientially encounter the unitive phenomenon that bonds every ultimately irreducible integer of matter in the entire universe into one integrated harmonic whole. And that by dint of the experience of this unitive dimension, we can all know, each one of us, each woman and each man can know what conduct on the part of humans, individual or collective, you know, is in harmony with or disharmonious to the natural order of the universe.
Now, this sounds like you're calling on ordinary people to all partake of what mystics have been doing.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And the fact is that the mystics, like Jesus and like Muhammad and like the other major prophets, are basically what Pierre Teilhard de Chardin was saying, are basically mutations. That there are mutations that have flashed into being before their environment is prepared to cope with them, and that therefore they're destroyed by their environment because they're not ready for them. And yet this is evolving. This is a faculty that is evolving teleologically in our human family, and that is now on the brink of manifesting itself in full flower. And that's what's happened, just like Jesus said, you know, that you shall do these things. You shall do things greater than I. You know, and he said, you know, it's not so much what I'm saying to you, it's who I am. It's who I am. Look at what I am. And he had all of these siddhas, the capabilities of levitation, the capabilities of transmutation of matter from water into wine. He had the ability to raise people from the dead by reaching down in infusing their energy field with his vibrational frequency. These are the same things. These are the siddhas of the Hindus and the Buddhists. You know, the prophets have known this forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Sufis do that stuff too. But
that's right.
What do you think of René Guénon's critique of this? Though René Guénon went into the various kinds of Freemasonic and spiritualist movements back at the beginning of the 20th century, and then he came out of them disillusioned and said that traditional religion is really the only way to deal with this, that people, there's a kind of a satanic false spirituality that seduces people when they have these kinds of transcendental experiences, but their ego ends up
The fact is, if you try to provide people shortcuts into having access to the siddhas, without the kind of evolution of the full spirit, you know, it can be dangerous. And that's one of the rationales that's been used by the church for centuries, to say that you cannot really allow the great unwashed to have access to these inner secrets of the church. And you see all the stuff in the Gospels of the fact that Jesus would speak to people in parables, but that in fact he would withdraw into secret to share the genuine mysteries with his apostles. You know, this idea of an esoteric dimension of the churches has been historically available. Mm-hmm. You know, that you have Annie Besant has written that really interesting book called What the Hidden Esoteric Christianity is the name of it.
Yeah, and we have something like that in Islam as well, where the Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, was said to have shared these kinds of things with Ali. And then both the Shia and Sufi Muslims have kept that alive in their ways.
That's right. That's right. You know, and Pir Nasir Allah Shah is one of the five living Sufi masters that I happen to have known. You know, it would speak with us about that. You know, and so this esoteric dimension of the spiritual practices has been known for centuries. It's an open secret in front of the human family. But, you know, the old Sufi saying that when a pickpocket meets a saint, all he sees are his pockets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that this is, in a sense, self-concealed. It's a thing that if you can't hear it, or as you just said, you know, if you have eyes to see and ears to hear, then you hear what I'm saying. And so there's this entire mysterious dimension to this thing, which is now becoming more and more open to people. And this is what Francis is saying, that we're on the edge with nuclear weapons still. I mean, the fact of the matter is there's still thousands and thousands of nuclear weapons, you know, pointed at each other, still capable of destroying the entire world. You know, that we have, you know, 403 private nuclear reactors, all of which are basically within 2 miles of the seacoast, you know, with clear expectations of you know, from you know, 28 inches to potentially 3, 4, or 5 feet. Of increased sea levels, you know, before the year 2100, and you know that we're going to have hundreds of Fukushimas, you know, the inundation of those plants with seawater, you know, and the potential contamination of the sea, the destruction of the bacterial or the microscopic life at the base of the seas, you know, destroying the entire food chain and the oceans, you know, and as you know, the small life in the oceans play a major, major role in affecting the content of the atmosphere.
Yes.
You know, this threat that is being posed to our human family by certain elements of our human family has to be identified, and we have to move now to stop it. We can't continue mm-hmm. just to shift from one foot to another, standing in front of these people. You know, it's like a person who has one bullet in his gun holding 100 people hostage. You know, and it's just the lack of courage of the people to step forward and take them down.
Well, that's what we're trying to get going here with Truth Jihad Radio. And Daniel Sheehan, I really appreciate your terrific work. We're at the end of the hour, but it's been a fascinating conversation. I wouldn't mind getting back and talking with you about some of these esoteric topics as well at some point in the future. But
sure.
For now, this has been a wonderful hour talking about Pope Francis and his new encyclical. Thank you so much. Appreciate your amazing work. And all I can say is keep it up, and I can't wait till we can talk again.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate the time.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. where there is hatred, let me sow love. Stop.